Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Classes of Male. My name is Alan Gygax, and I'm sitting here with my buddy and running mate, Michael Brazemley, and it is the end of the National Convention. We have been here Monday through Friday. I actually got here Saturday. Michael came in early Sunday, and we went to the meet and greet on Sunday afternoon, which was put on by the NALC, and they had all this food and open bar, and it was pretty great. And then Monday, it's time to get to work. So Monday through Friday, it's convention business every day. Monday starts with class at 7:30 in the morning, goes to like 7:30 goes to 9. And then from 9 to 10, there's a break, which is when I've been recording most of my podcast episodes. And then 10 o'clock, the convention starts in earnest. And then from 10 o'clock till roughly 3 o'clock, we do convention business. And then at 3:30 is the afternoon class that goes until 5, and then we're finally free for the day. So it has been busy. This is my first ever convention, and I'm sitting here with Michael. Michael, how many conventions have you been to now?
This is my second.
Your second convention. And so the last one was
second in, national.
Right. The last one was in Chicago.
Yeah.
Yep. And we have some thoughts about how things have gone during this convention, but one of the things that I want to talk about first, in terms of just general impressions, is this has been...
He's filling it. So I'm Michael, for some people who have done
that. I already
not
said
know.
That. I said
know.
I'm here with Michael Brazemley. All right, go ahead.
And, you know, as again, we are running for president and vice president.
Yeah, Branch 2502.
Branch 2502.
The fight in 2502nd.
In Las Vegas. And a lot of work ahead of us. This convention has been a lot of learning experience.
Yep.
What I do miss is that we're sitting here, you and I'm talking, where we could have been interviewed by Corey Walton, but that didn't happen.
It's still going to happen. Don't worry about it. Well, for the both of us, yeah, that's true. I'm still on the agenda. But yeah, you got to get out of here. Yeah. Michael is going up to Maine to visit his family. Where in Maine?
Near Oxford, Maine, or Bridgeport, but my family's been from Thompson Lake, which I believe the lake is 8 miles long. So, my cousins have rented out an Airbnb, Airbnb, in fact, by the lake. So they told me to bring a swimming trunk, which I'll probably still never go in the lake because lake is going to be freezing cold.
Right. I don't know how people do it. So coming from Las Vegas to here, it's been 110, 115 in Las Vegas, and here, like today, it's warm because it's 80 degrees, and man, I've been cold. You know, when we're sitting out on this patio, we're staying at this hotel called the Seaport, and there's a lot of carriers down here. There's all these hotels right around the convention center. So again, this is some of the general impression stuff I want to talk about. If you haven't been to a convention, or even if you have, you know what it's like, there are letter carriers everywhere.
Oh, you get to meet so many of them, so many different places.
Right.
And some that you're like, you're from there? You know?
Right. It's great. Well, like with the guy, we just interviewed a carrier who is from Florida, but he has this thick Boston accent. Well, it turns out he grew up in Boston and then he moved down to Florida. But yeah, you meet people from all over. And so the first night we had that meet and greet, and it was so amazing to just be like trying to find a table to stand at. And then this person is like the president of the Los Angeles Letter Carriers Union. And this other person is, you know, from out of Washington, D.C. And this other person's like a national officer. And it's wild, you know, because for me, I still think of myself as just a carrier. And then every person you talk to is a president. And it's like, wow, man, everybody's the president. Go ahead.
And that's where I learned that a lot of the majority of the people that are there are presidents, vice presidents,
right?
NBA or national business agents to RAAs and other national officers and so forth. There's so many of them, right? Mm-hmm. And so when they're doing their own thing of trying to do their own officer stuff they all agree with each other. And so a lot of them don't listen to what the actual carriers are doing. And so what we were missing was a lot of regular carriers at this convention. And everybody is able to get here. You just got to qualify to get here. And there's a lot of carriers that was missing.
That's so true. All right. So I got two thoughts on that. First, the convention is a lot more democratic than I was expecting. And we're going to talk about that a little bit more as it goes on. But it's also more oligarchical than I was expecting, where everybody here is an officer or they're higher up in their branch. Now, most branches, even the president, is not necessarily a full-time union officer. We have people like Fred Woodley, who I interviewed while we were here, the host of the Delivering Solidarity podcast, and he is a union president, but he delivers mail pretty much every day because there's not full-time work. Whereas at our branch, we have three full-time officers who never deliver the mail, and there's a lot of that down here too. And part of the problem that we have is that those type of officers from the large branches and then the national officers, those are the ones who hold the most sway. And when we had today, the topic of open bargaining came to the floor to discuss the resolutions. And so you had this rank and file movement of newer stewards, of younger people, of people who are experiencing the work conditions every day, arguing for the open bargaining movement. And then, Michael, who was arguing against the open bargaining movement?
Well, that would be retirees, that would be the officers, and they were all still there,
right?
Because everybody was leaving. They're trying to get back.
Agents.
And national business agents. They're right. All still there because they all are either talking to Brian Renfro, trying to kiss their ass. And so majority, I said two-thirds of people were still officers and voting for the executive council.
Right.
And so when we got all these guys like Tyler Vassar and all of them were trying to pass the open negotiations so that we can see what they're doing.
Right.
And they're trying to make all these excuses like, well, you want to see what the pay is going to be, this, and that. And they're like, no, we want to know that you're actually fighting for us.
Right.
The open negotiation, basically Tyler was saying is, hey, we want to see what you're fighting for us. We don't care that, you know, we do care, but we still want to see what the pay is. But we really, actually, the only thing we really want to see is that you guys are fighting for us.
Right. Right. So with open bargaining, you guys will have probably heard, you will have heard this already, but it was a partial success. Some of what Tyler has been fighting for, what open bargaining and the BFN, Build a Fighting NALC, has been fighting for, succeeded. There were resolutions that were kind of watered down that were approved by the executive board, and so those are now official recommendations for how the NALC should fight on a national level. And so that's something. The strong open bargaining resolutions that we really wanted did not pass because they didn't. Almost nothing went opposite of executive board recommendation.
And towards the end.
Yeah, yeah. There were some things that did pass over the objection of the executive board. And a really big thing that passed over the direct objection of Brian Renfro. And I want to talk about that. I want to talk about the way that this process is more democratic than I was expecting. And I'm really pleased by it. So the first night, or the first day
being the democratic, okay? And what I'm saying is that, don't get me wrong, the officers, they're doing their jobs and doing it. I'm not saying they're bad about it, okay?
Right.
I'm just saying is that we need more regular carriers to come to this convention and vote for what you guys want.
But okay? Not just
if we had them, we might have been passing some.
We might have. Yeah, because it's not just vote for what you want. It's also speak about what you want. And this is where, because I didn't sign up in time and because I wasn't a delegate, I couldn't vote and I couldn't speak. And so they have these microphones spread all throughout the room. And something that really surprised me about the convention is all these resolutions that are essentially going to direct. Well, two things on that. First, they're not as binding as we might think. You know, it's still up to the executive board. It's up to the president to decide how they want to interpret it and how they want to implement the things that we recommend. You know, they're not necessarily binding resolutions except for the ones that actually change the Constitution. But except for that, they're really just recommendations. And then the executive board says, well, we like that recommendation. We don't like the other one. And even the ones that are adopted, it's still up to them what they want to do with it.
And then once they're fighting with the post office,
Right.
You know, just because we passed it at this level doesn't mean the post office is going
to grow. Right. That we want it to be a bargaining position. Yeah, that still doesn't mean it's going
to
get implemented.
Yeah, all that is saying, hey, we want to bring it forward to the post office so we can fight it. Doesn't mean the post office is still going to agree.
Right. That is true. So with these resolutions, with the direction that we want the union to take, one of the things that surprised me was how malleable public perception was. Or not public perception, the perception of the delegates was that were there. Because these resolutions aren't really even published until a little ways before. You know, they may be available on some website somewhere. But honestly, most of the people at the convention, the first time they see these resolutions is either when they pick up their book on the day they register, or it's when they're actually being read at the convention that, hey, now it's time to vote on it. And so that means people don't necessarily come in with these entrenched positions that they're unwilling to change. You know, if you think about the elections that are coming up nationally this November, you already know who you're voting for between Kamala Harris and Donald Trump. And somebody, you can watch the debate that's going to come up between those two, and pretty much no matter what happens, you're still going to either vote for Kamala Harris or Donald Trump. But when you're hearing for the first time a resolution that, what's a resolution that comes to mind off the top of your head? Just any resolution.
Well, the resolution, we had one where they wanted you, the pay thing.
A locality pay.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. That's a great example. Locality pay. And so the argument people are hearing for the first, and now this is one that's come up before at conventions, but locality pay is, hey, if you're taking a job as a letter carrier in San Francisco, you need to make more money than a letter carrier in Omaha, for example. And so
COLA is in a different state.
Right. Because, yeah, territorial COLAs is what they're called now because we already have them in Alaska and Hawaii.
Only two states.
Only two states get it. That's right. And no localities get it. So now this resolution is put forward and people can stand up and talk about that resolution. They can be either for, against, or they can rise under point of order and offer amendments where you can say like, well, I know the resolution says this, but maybe we should make it where it can be capped at like 10% extra pay. And so you can add that amendment to the resolution and all that stuff happens on the fly, on the spot. And then you can argue for it. You can argue against it. And if you're persuasive, you can turn people's votes. You can change people's minds. And if you make this great point and people cheer, well, you know, maybe that's a good idea. Maybe we should vote for that.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it did not pass.
It did not pass. No, that is true. And it has never passed.
But I heard some arguments from other people around me. And the biggest argument is that our contract is not done yet.
Right.
Let's figure that out first.
Yeah. So let's talk about some of the arguments. We'll do a little kind of mock argument about it because this is settled, right? It is not going to be part of our bargaining positions going forward. So the argument against passage, and we'll talk about the language of how that's done in a sec, because that's also screwy. So the argument against passage is, hey, we're a union. We're all in this together. And so it's one work, you know, equal work for equal pay. And so we can't just be giving people who live in one place one type of pay and another place one type of pay because we're all one union. So that's the argument that held, you know, against passage. But what's the argument on the other side?
Well,
I'll give it if you don't want to.
Go ahead.
So the argument on the other side is, okay, if you're going to say that we all get one kind of pay, how do you expect to hire people in San Francisco, in Los Angeles, actually, right here in Boston?
The guy talking about Boston is that he was saying that, hey, if you wanted to go rent a one-bedroom apartment in Boston, it was $4,500.
Right.
And so the people, so they would say, can anybody afford to pay a $4,500 in our, mail carry salary? And most of them are like, exactly. There's no way.
And so this is why we need you, dear listener, to come to the next convention, to make yourself a delegate and to get there, because the people who are voting on this, almost all of them are already at step P, or they're retired. These are people who bought their house because they were a postal worker for 20 years. They had that steady income. They were able to buy their house 20 years ago when it cost them $60,000 instead of $450,000 like today. So the things that they're worried about aren't the same things that new hires are worried about. And you'd like to think they have empathy and that they understand, but there's not that passion and that lived experience that rank and file members have today. And there's a place at the convention for the rank and file, the new employee to speak up and to have that voice, and it will be heard. You know, whether you change the vote or not, there's no guarantee that that's going to happen, but you can be heard.
Go ahead. There was approximately about 5,500 people at this convention.
Right.
Okay. And I say good 3,000, maybe 3,500 of them were retirees. I mean, there were a lot.
I don't know if it's that high, but it's a lot.
Maybe it looks like a lot because a lot of them were over 50. So some were still in the post office.
Yeah. And there was a guy in there who was like in his 90s and was still out delivering the mail. He was not a retiree. Yeah.
But that's what it looked like. Okay. Yeah. It looked like the 3,500 of them were retired carriers, right. But obviously I'm exaggerating because there was a lot of carriers that
still deliver even if they're not retirees. 50,
you know?
Yeah.
But here's the thing. If we get these delegates that's new, because we got over 200,000 postal workers that's working.
Right.
And we already got 5,000 people to show up. That means there's so many people who can show up. If we can get max people at every city to be able to come to this convention, we could literally have 10,000 people at this convention. Can you imagine if we had another 4,000 more carriers that's younger people that can vote, how those votes could have changed?
Right, because it's important for you to realize you are just as much a member of this union as Brian Renfro is. You are just as much a member of this union as your business agent is. You are just as much a member of this union as that retiree is. And you have every right to have a voice just as much as those other people have. And that's what can happen at the convention if you come. They don't police who can get up on that microphone and say what they want to say. Anybody who stands in line and pushes that button, they can have their voice heard.
Now here's the thing too, is you got to change your read your bylaws at every branch that you're at. My branch is that you have to be at the union meetings 8 out of 12 a year for 2 years. And as long as you do that, then you're qualified to go to the convention. Now, other places, you have to be voted in, and some different places have different bylaws. So you just got to read the bylaws and just qualify to make it here. And I'm telling you what, though, you know, once you get here and see the stuff, especially if you're new, you'll look at it like, God, I belong to a great unit. Because when you see so many people, you're like, wow, I did not realize that our big unit is that big. And the thing is, this was still a small part of how many people that work for post office.
It is amazing.
You know, so
we have a very powerful union.
But what's great about, like, my branch is that they pay for the airline ticket. They pay for the room. Of course, we're pretty lucky because we're in a big branch, so they actually pay for each person to get a room. So we didn't have to bunk with somebody else. And
Michael was nice enough to let me sleep on the floor.
They give you a per diem so that you can buy food. And now, don't get me wrong, in Boston, the per diem is not enough. But either way, they would give you some to come here.
Right.
And everybody should take that advantage. And so that, because the union's doing all that stuff for you so you can be part of the union. Okay. And that's, now, don't get me wrong, there's some towns or wherever, you got to have a hard time because some branches don't have the money as much. That's why you got to read the bylaws and hopefully you can qualify to come here. But I really would love to see a bunch of new carriers. And look, I'm 53. So when I said that those are people that was over 50, you know,
that's
I'm
you
53.
Too, yeah.
So
and
that's,
I'm 29. And we're both at the top step.
No, I'm not at top step.
Oh, you're not?
I'm at step M.
I got four more years to go. And your table two.
And table two, because I started as a CCA.
Look at that, Michael, being the voice of the people.
Yeah, start as a CCA. So, like we were talking to John Murphy.
Yeah.
And he was talking about how if you do the steps, that after 2013, you add the amount of money that you miss compared to table one, is over $300,000.
Right, over the course of your career.
Over the course. And
not
which
including
I'm pretty much there.
Right.
I've been at post office as a regular for almost 10 years now.
Right.
So I only got like a couple years, 2 to 3 years left before I maxed out on the pay. And that means I've lost, I've not gained that $300,000 that I could have had if it was the other table. And that doesn't
include matching TSP contributions, worse benefits, and the, whatever time you spent as a CCA.
And now this contract, we're losing more money. This contract thing, some of the stuff they were trying to pass, it was the one thing that really bothered me about the Renfro appeal thing, okay? And don't get me wrong. I mean, people have drinking problems and they want to recover. They go to rehab and all that stuff. I have no problem with that. I have sympathy for them, okay? But Brian Renfro, being that he is our leader, he did it at the most wrong time. But I mean, I guess you can't set up certain times to do it.
Yeah.
But he's our leader, okay? Now, here's the thing. Being a leader, and if he figured out that he has a problem, I would have no problem if he set it up so that I say, hey, guys, I have a drinking problem, and I need to step down a little bit. I'm going to have Paul Berner, who's our executive vice president, and James Henry being the vice president. I'm going to let him know to take care of our union while I recover from the rehab. I can 100% guarantee we would have understood.
Right.
And we wouldn't be pissed off as much because he basically set it up that it's going to be taken care of. Okay. Right. But he didn't do any of that. Okay. Now, another thing that really pissed me off was that he goes, well, I told Paul Berner that I'm going to rehab and he's going to do a great job and take care of everything. And he's done a great job. And I remember yelling out from where I see it. I'm like, well, you know, if he had over 400 days, what did he do? Because our contract is still not done yet.
Since he's been sober,
He's
at one point he bragged about, and credit to him, you know, he's been 400 days sober, something like that. Mm-hmm. All right, well then, where's the results? Where's the contract? If you've been sober all this time.
Yeah, and then
you can't use being drunk as an excuse.
And as some people know, like especially Corey Walton talked about it, is that they locked up in this hotel and they're going to work on this contract and get it done and all that stuff. And
still
he comes on to the convention and goes, it's getting near.
Yeah. We're still really close. We're like seconds away minutes away from getting it done.
I still believe he's got it done. He's just going to wait till we're gone because he didn't want to riot at the convention.
If it's a bad contract, then those votes might have gone differently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So those are theories, by the way.
Let's talk a little bit about how those votes went, right? Because that's the big story from the convention. And you know, so we'll talk about it. So the first thing that happened was on Monday. Now that this is all over, we can talk about some of the CLC planning that went on.
Yeah.
And there was fear that, so before the convention happened, Renfro put out a ruling that said, hey, these charges have already been heard, and so it's inappropriate to hear them at the convention. And, of course, that ruling is completely self-serving because, oh, you want to bring charges against me? No, I'm not going to allow it, right? He made that decision himself. And that rubbed a lot of people the wrong way.
Paul Barner wrote that.
Oh, letter. It was Barner's decision. Or it was his.
He wrote it.
All right. Well, either way, same difference. Yeah, but important distinction.
Mm-hmm.
So it still comes across as self-serving. So it apparently felt that way to the assembled mass as well. That, no, we are the supreme body.
Yes.
And you're going to let us hear it. Go ahead.
So there was a big votes came out, and it was people from CLC, like Charlie Miller was there.
Yep.
And he actually came on and said that, you know, that's self-serving. We're the supreme body, and we should have the right to vote.
Right. Because, so let's talk about the process here for just a second of how that went down on Monday. And this is what the CLC had planned. Because Renfro has already said these appeals will not be heard, what happens today, as it turned out, what happens at the end of the day is like all this leftover business has to get handled. And the fear was that this would be pushed to the leftover business and it wouldn't be handled until Friday. So on Monday, the CLC did two things. Well, they covered every single microphone so that when it was time to start hearing from people with their points of order, it was going to be a CLC person no matter what. So they all showed up early and they just stood on the microphone. And then there's a button that you have to hold down that makes a light over your microphone flash that says, hey, I want to talk. And the folks from the CLC, including Corey Walton, Charlie Miller, Ricardo Guzman, and many others, had to just stand there and hold that button for hours while Renfro spoke, just waiting to be called upon. Go ahead.
But Brian could have said, you know, okay, you're on the mic, or whatever. But he just went on and on and on and it just, for over 3 hours before he actually allowed it. And but hey, you know, this is where you're proud of the union, okay? The voice of our voice that we as in delegates that who can vote, we figured out that hey, we are the supreme being in our union.
This
our votes
body,
count.
Right.
Okay.
So Charlie Miller, Ricardo Guzman, the people from the CLC get on the mic and they say, hey, we want to hear these charges. We want to overrule your ruling that, you know, only you can make these decisions. And to the body's credit, the body said, yeah, you know, we don't like this autocracy. And Michael and I had the chance, you know, the people we're sitting with all pretty much felt the same way we did. And so you don't get a lot of outside perspective. But when we went out to dinner, when we're like walking around, we encounter all kinds of other carriers. And so we start to hear some of these other perspectives. And people felt that, yeah, this is a self-serving ruling. It comes across as autocratic. And we don't like that. And so when the vote came to overrule his decision, it was overruled by about 600 votes, you know, by maybe a 60-40 split. And so, damn, look at that. Mm-hmm. Stepping up, speaking truth to power. Good job, us.
Yeah. Then afterwards, as you said, as we're meeting more people, find out that there was a lot of people who had no idea what these appeals were about.
Right.
Why Renfro's and had all these charges. None of them knew it. A lot of them didn't know what that was.
Right. Yeah, they weren't plugged into like the controversy of what was going on. And they're like, dude, what's wrong with these CLC people? What are they up about?
Well, quickly, it was basically about, for people who doesn't know, it was about Brian Renfro being, you know, we talked about the rehab. He was too drunk to show up to our contract negotiations. So there were charges for him, neglection of duty, and not showing up for the job, and there was also defamation to James Henry. We got out of retaliation because James Henry and Chris Jackson filed the charges against Renfro, so he was being retaliated, saying that it was a sexual harassment, and found out there was nothing, and so he was retaliating.
All right, what
to. And two, using our NALC vehicle and where he got caught doing a DUI. So those were the basic stuff that we were going over.
Now, let's be fair. These charges have now been adjudicated, not just by the executive council, but also by the supreme body of the delegates at the convention. And so what happened is now on Wednesday, so the CLC says, hey, or not this, well, Brian. Whatever. Those people said, hey, us people. Hey, we want to hear these charges, and we want to make sure we hear them by Wednesday so that it can't just be put off to the end of the convention when everybody's gone home. And it worked. So Wednesday, we start hearing these charges, and it's a process. And it's long, and it's tedious. And by the end of day three, we finish up charge number one, and now it's time to vote.
Now, during that process, it was not Brian Renfro running that whole thing. It was Fred Rolando.
Right, because Renfro was going to have to be able to defend himself, and you can't do that from the chair.
Yeah. So Fred Rolando came there and did the thing. But he's so charismatic, so he did make the process a little bit more
pleasant
it was. Than it could be.
This is my first ever time really seeing Fred Rolando, and he was really cool. Mm-hmm. He was fun. He was funny. He was charming.
Yeah, but you got to also remember, Fred knew about it, Brian Renfro's drinking problems, and he still recommended him to be the president. So you still got to take that in consideration, too.
Yeah. All right. So now it's time for the vote. And we vote on whether we want to overturn the decision of the executive council. The executive council voted not to charge Renfro or not to find him guilty of these charges. And so now do we want to overturn? And this is a funny thing about the way voting happens at the National Convention. If you vote yes, like, are we going to overturn these charges? What do we think about these charges? And if you vote yes, you're voting to sustain the recommendation of the Executive Council And if you vote no, then you're voting to overturn the recommendation of the executive council. And this is the way it is for all of the resolutions as well, which is so weird because essentially if you vote yes, you're voting no. And if you vote no, you're voting yes. But that's
for
the way
guilty,
it goes.
For
here.
The guilty verdict.
Right, yeah. Right, exactly. And that's it's wacky.
Yeah.
So anyway, so we have the vote, and the vote winds up coming out in Renfro's favor. And then the next
everything
day,
came up for yeah, Renfro's favor.
The next day, and everything came out just to sustain the recommendation of the executive council or whatever it is that they ruled. And most of the votes throughout the entire convention came out that way. And so it's interesting to see this divide where people did say, hey, we don't want an autocrat. We don't want to just go with whatever you say. And then when it was time to vote, we're going to go with what you say.
Yeah. One of the things I learned from that is that we had anywhere from 1,500 to 1,700 votes against Brian Renfro.
Right, compared to like 2,500 for.
Yeah.
And so it is a big, you know, it's more pushback than...
It was 2,500 to about 2,900 on the votes for Renfro.
Right. Right.
But that told us that
so
basically
about
a third of the people were against him. That's a
right.
lot.
It is a lot. That's it a is a lot. Lot. So, yeah. And having not been to conventions before, usually there's nobody against him. You know, people just kind of fall in line and everything goes smoothly. I've never been to one, but that's what I hear.
Yeah.
And so this is a big change mm-hmm. from previous conventions. And it was definitely an interesting time to be here. So that was the big business. And then there's all this little business. There's a lot of videos. There were these funny videos, credit where credit is due, where there were these three Bostonians sitting at a desk and Renfro's on the other side and we're learning about like what things are called in Boston and how to understand the accent. And they were pretty funny. Those came off really good. And if you get a chance to see those maybe on YouTube or something, I would check those out. Those came out really nice. And then there's stuff about the history of Boston and the history of the Union. There was a really nice retrospective about our union president, or no, on the last day they talked about Glenn Norton, the president of Branch 2502 forever. They had really nice things to say about him. At another point, our union got up and spoke at the microphone under a point of privilege to memorialize Glenn, and that was really
nice. And that
nice
was on
as well.
Tuesday.
I think that was Tuesday,
and
yeah.
Brian Renfro said, oh, we got something planned for Friday.
Right, and then that happened today, yeah. And that was really nice. Yeah. That was a cool thing that they did to honor Glenn Norton. And he is missed. He was a good man. You know, and so all that stuff happens at the convention. There's people who get up and press point of privilege, and then they get recognized, and then they talk about whatever they want to talk about. And some of it drags on. Sometimes it gets tedious. And also, not all public speakers are created equally. And so there's a lot of that, and that's interesting. And then people get on the mic, and there's this bounce back where you're talking, and then like half a second later, it goes over the PA, and then you hear it back. And that makes it really difficult to focus on what you're saying. And there were people who really got messed up by that and struggled. I wonder, you can be sure that at the Los Angeles convention, I'm going to be speaking at least some. And yeah, I wonder how I'm going to deal with that, how difficult that's going to be. The key, I think, is to have prepared remarks.
We're kind of running out of time.
Yeah.
But next convention, obviously, just said it, we're going to be in LA. And then after LA, it'll be Minnesota. Then after Minnesota, it'll be in Hawaii.
Yep.
And it's going to be pretty cool. But LA is the important one.
Right.
Because the new election for the national officers is in 2026. So how that works is that they will bring up all the nominees at the convention. So you'll know who's running for president. You'll know who's running for executive VP, the vice president, and all the other positions. Okay, and if there is a one position where nobody's going against, like James Henry was on the lot 2 years ago, and since nobody went against James Henry, he was automatically became the vice president. And so this 2026, you know, we saw that Mike Careffa is going to say that he's going to run for president. James Henry's going to run for president. And I'm sure Brian's going to run for president. So there might be three names.
Right.
You know, it will be an interesting LA convention.
That's another thing that happened here that I would like to touch on is that there were breakout meetings among the concerned letter carriers had a couple of them that were very well attended, spilled out into the hallway, jammed the hallways. Yeah, that was really cool. There was the Build a Fighting NALC.
It wasn't as big.
No, but still pretty good for a grassroots movement that's just getting started.
For somebody, for Tyler Vassar, who's who's very young, to be able to start that.
What a great convention for Tyler Vassar. Yeah. You know, his personal resolution didn't get passed, but open bargaining did pass.
Some
of open bargaining did pass, and without Tyler's effort, none of that would have happened. You know, and the efforts of the combined open bargaining movement. And so that was really cool.
Somebody had to teach him all that stuff. Somebody taught him well.
Yeah. Yeah, Tyler's really impressive.
Yeah,
I was very impressed with Tyler. And he's the future of this union, and I'm here for it.
Yeah.
Yep, so that was cool. All right, so then the other thing that happened as well is there's classes every day before and after the convention, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday,
I got to five of them.
Yeah, so most of them. Because this is Classes of Mail, I had my laptop out, was taking copious notes, and so you can be sure that the stuff I learned there, I'm going to do my best to pass along to you. And that will have to wait for future episode, because Michael has a rental car to catch and head on up to
which Manny. I'm late for.
Yeah. All right, so we're going to wrap it up here. Guys, thank you very much for listening. Thanks for being part of this journey with me. And for those of you who came up and said hello to me in Boston, which was an amazing number of people, thank you so much for doing that. That was phenomenal. I loved it. I love seeing every one of you. And here's to more to come. Thanks for listening, guys. I'll catch you next time.